Are you ready?
Welcome everybody to Wrestling with the War!
Welcome back to Wrestling with the War, everybody. It is your host, BC Hunter, and I am not flying solo this week. I brought in a special ringer, a special guest to talk about 1995 WWF pay-per-views. It's the one, the only, Taylor from Jaded Wrestling. Taylor, how you doing, my friend?
Dude, I'm so good. You gave me a pay-per-view that I know and I love, and I am ready to talk about it. You said I didn't want to give you this shitty pay-per-view, and then I was like, I freaking love this pay-per-view. Like, as soon as I started watching it, it took me back like a year or two when we started this podcast. We were just bouncing around on random pay-per-views, me and Will, and we watched this pay-per-view, and I freaking loved it then, and I freaking love it now. So...
We're probably going to have a little bit of differing opinions on some parts of it, but I think overall we'll agree to what the quality of the show was, that's for sure.
I'm a sports entertainment fan. I'll be the first to admit that there is something about sports entertainment and wrestling that I always am attracted to. A lot of people are like, what's the good match on the card? But I really love a really, really good segment, and I have a soft spot for chunky wrestlers, and there's a couple of them on this card too. So this is a win-win for me.
There definitely is. Yeah, it's a different time in the physique world of WWF at this point. Obviously coming off of the old steroid trial era, and we're kind of transitioning right now. You could definitely see the transition period happening here between, I guess, new generation to what we're going to be going into with the Attitude Era.
It's good stuff, man. You can't beat it. I mean, and if you're really, really upset about too many segments and too much bullcrap and short matches, they give you what you want at the end of the pay-per-view. So everybody gets what they want. Everybody goes home happy, whether you want a cheeseburger, you want a chicken sandwich, you want some nuggets. Everybody gets what they want.
I love it. All right, before we get into things, I'm going to copy off our good friend Ted the Hillbilly Heel, and I'm going to get you to shout out where people can find you, what you're up to before we get going into the episode, so they're forced to go find you somewheres.
Well, we are available on all platforms, and we have been releasing on Saturday the last few weeks, but our last two episodes are on wrestling's weirdest merchandise. Me and Will dive into the weirdest merchandising items we can find. In the last episode, we deep dive into Danbury Mint, which is like glass China dolls that look like wrestlers. And it's very disturbing and very weird, but it's something that seems to be our lane lately, so that's what we do. Available at all podcast platforms, and we're on YouTube and we're on Twitter. You can find us pretty much anywhere. But again, I just really appreciate you for bringing us on, to be honest.
No problem, man. It's Jaded Wrestling for anybody who wants to know. So you want to give that social media handle for it?
It's JadedWrasslin. Any platform of podcasting, we're on there, and we're trying to get on more. Anything I can find that I don't find us on, I'm sticking us on. So shout out to Podbean.
All right. And before we go, I'll just say a quick mention that for myself, just go to YouTube, because that's where I'm trying to really build some things up. It's Wrestling with the Truth on YouTube, as well as Wrestling with the 80s, because I'm doing a 80s centric YouTube channel on there as well. And of course, this, if you're listening to it, you found it. So congratulations. Feel free to subscribe and leave some 5-star reviews. We'll read them out over the airwaves as well.
Yes, yes, yes. If they're not already supporting you, they need to get on that ASAP, because I'm learning a lot and I don't know anything when it comes to 80s wrestling. So thank you for that, my friend.
Nice, nice. Hey, man, it's a fun ride, that's for sure. All right, speaking of fun rides, let's get into this. This is In Your House, number 5. After a couple of years old, it was renamed to Season's Beatings. Very clever name, and for sure, by the WWF. But this is taking part on December 17th of 1995 in Hershey, Pennsylvania. We had an attendance for this show of 7,289. So it shows kind of where WWF is at right now as far as popularity. Although this is actually not bad compared to some of the other shows they've done. They've had some... In Your House shows where they've been in the 4,000s for attendance. So yeah, Hershey, Pennsylvania, I think is traditionally a pretty good crowd for them. I know they shot a bunch of Saturday Night Main Events there over the years in the 80s, and it's traditionally a stop along the way. East Coast is always good for them. So
wonderful place. You ever been there?
Never been there. No,
they got the Hershey factory there, and every light in the whole city is like, looks like a Hershey Kiss. So the whole place is lined with Hershey Kiss lights. It's honestly a kind of dope place. I'd love to see a wrestling show there.
You know what? They know what pays the bills, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Hershey out here, man. We're going to throw it in your face. Make you want a Hershey.
Do they have a highway called the Hershey Highway, by the way?
Oh, I hope they do. I hope they do. And I hope it gets backed up.
We're off the rails, and I love it. All right.
Welcome to me on the show.
Here we go. So we open up the show with Jerry the King Lawler and Vince McMahon talking about the card that's coming up. And they mentioned that Santa Claus is there, which is a nice bit of foreshadowing for what's gonna come. And then the King mentioned that he has a big surprise. And he mentioned that about 40 times during this 2-minute intro. I don't even know if he actually revealed the surprise by the end of it, but he kept mentioning it.
I'm not sure what the surprise either was, to be honest. No. All I got out of this opening segment is that I really love Vince and Lawler together.
I know. Yeah.
I don't have any issues with them as a tag team commentator booth. Honestly, they might move up the rankings, and they're not first or second or third. Don't get me wrong. But like, they're in there somewhere of like, that's a pretty good duo for commentary.
Where would you rank them versus Vince and Jesse?
I do not like Jesse. So okay. I will go ahead out on a limb here. I like Jesse in a segment. I don't like Jesse in a booth. So Jesse to me is a little bit too combative in a booth. Like it's not a bad thing to have combating people in a booth that disagree. That's almost every time. But he's very combative and he gets very angry when you don't agree with him. And I just don't like it. Like it's always been a thing where it's like it seems to take away from the matches for me. And that's something I never really liked about him, but that's just my personal opinion. A lot of people love Jesse, and, you know, I hear the impressions all the time now. He's a popular guy. What can you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He likes to put himself over on his commentary, which you're supposed to be putting the wrestlers over. So that was one of the issues. Jesse was better with Gorilla because Gorilla would put him in his place better.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem like they got along.
That's the person that's very close to the top. I would honestly say that Gorilla's got to be part of those top two commentary teams, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Gorilla in the Brain was just fantastic.
They got to be number one or number two. They have to be.
And then JR and King. And then you can put Vince and King possibly number three there for it.
Yeah. JR probably slides above Vince as well. I think Vince knows exactly what he wants, though, when it comes to commentary, which is the thing I like about him. He has the plans for exactly what he wants to say, and he knows what he wants to say, and he delivers on what he wants to say. So that's the magic of Vince is I know exactly where I'm going to put this, even if I don't know the name of a move. I can throw out what a maneuver and keep it moving. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we get going to the ring, and we're going to have our first match. It's the tag team, the very nicely named Sid and the Kid tag team. I guess that's probably what led to Sidney Crosby's nickname back in the day. Maybe his parents just really enjoyed WWF wrestling from 1995, and that's why they named him Sidney. But Sid and the Kid versus Razor Ramon and Marty Jannetty. What do you remember of these two stellar tag teams?
So I did actually watch the one after this as well, and there's a storyline going on where he's a baby and I don't know what it is and I don't understand it. So the whole time I think they're saying something about him being a baby and wah. And I don't know what the hell 1-2-3 Kid did to deserve this.
Well, what it was is they were making 1-2-3 Kid out to be a bit of a crybaby as far as his feud with Razor and how he keeps losing and how Razor was treating him. And so they decide to have a crybaby match at the next In Your House, where literally the way to win was to put your opponent in a diaper.
Which is a bad match idea. I have a little bit of a note about originality and how people should respect originality. And it's okay to be different. The baby match is a bad idea. That's where I draw the line. That's the line in the sand. And this match felt like there was just a lot going on between Marty and Sid and Razor and 1-2-3 Kid. And then our friend in the audience, which I'm sure we're going to get to in a minute.
Yep.
There's just a whole lot going on. Like, this is just like everything packed into one tag team match.
That's what I was going to say. Well, first off, I was going to compliment Razor and Marty on coming out in matching leather jackets. I mean, that was that was nice. It just goes to show, like, even a random tag team putting a little touch into it is nice, right?
Yeah, Yeah. They don't look as flopped together.
Exactly. And then we, of course, we went to, yes, Goldust was in the crowd cheering on Mr. Ramon on his coach with his usher as well. This is pre-Marlena days, by the way.
I really love, like, he's just like a misunderstood man. You know what I mean? Like, people mm-hmm. just make him out to be this weird, awkward, creepy guy. But he's just a romantic. Like, he's just commenting and telling you about old movies and quoting lines from The Graduate. He's just a romantic at heart. And people just don't understand Goldust. There's nothing wrong with him having a little crush. You know, exactly. You know what I mean? He's here for an affair. The Graduate, 1976. 67, backwards, reverse it.
67, yeah. You can tell Goldust is just starting to come into the character now. He's still trying to figure out that lane that he's going, but you didn't get to see the Raw that followed this, but he actually has a really good promo on Razor where he talks about them oozing machismo together. So
he's the best part of this pay-per-view. Like, there's a lot of things I really love about this. Goldust is a shining light in a dark alley.
Yeah.
He's incredible. I will always respect character work, and he works the hell out of that character.
For sure. Think about it. If he had just been Dustin Rhodes coming back to the WWF, he would have been nothing. He would have been a jobber by the 4th month he was in there. But this character took off, and you actually considered him to be a possible world champion at one point.
Well, I thought so. Every time you see a guy in the background that's not a main time wrestler that you know, you always think that it's got to be like a famous jobber that'll get his break later. Like, there's a guy in this later that we're going to uncover as a really famous wrestler that's in a different costume. And at this point, I thought the Usher might be a famous wrestler, too. He's not. His name's Hank Scorpio. He's not a wrestler. He's not a famous wrestler. He's a complete jobber that never made it. So he got his opportunity as an Usher, and it didn't go as well as he would have liked.
He didn't take advantage of that 15 minutes of fame, but
got to work a little bit harder at that Usher role, buddy.
The other thing I was going to mention too is the guy that's interviewing Goldust ringside is my least favorite announcer of all time, Todd Pettengill. He just drives me out of my mind. And during the interview, Goldust hands him a gold note that he wants to give to Razor Ramon, and we can only guess about what's going to be inside that note.
I think at one point, doesn't Scott open it and just with disgust just say, yuck, you know what I mean, or something like that? I don't know if I remembered that right, but I remember him opening it and just being like, what is going on? Why is this part of this storyline? I'm not even wrestling you. Why are you here? I have to worry about a giant and Sid Vicious, and you're out here writing love notes to me from the sideline? Can you wait till I get backstage?
Oh, you wait. You'll see what happens there. But all right. So the only other thing I had to comment about this match, pretty good matchup, just your typical 80s, 90s style of heel versus face tag match. The heels, they isolated one guy, which is Marty, of course. That's what he's in there for. Razor gets a hot tag and surprisingly gets a win with a second rope bulldog of all moves. Doesn't even use the Razor's Edge. But man, if there was anybody that was truly over in 1995 in WWF, it's Razor Ramon.
I kind of sums up his whole career.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter what gimmick he's in or what phase he's in. He always seems to be able to connect with a crowd. Mm-hmm. And that's a reoccurring thing to me in this pay-per-view is you've got a bunch of people that whether they have their main time gimmicks or they're running backup gimmicks, they still have the ability to connect with a crowd. And Razor is one of the best at that.
For sure. The only other thing I'll point out about this match is I'm not sure your feelings on him or not, but old Earl Hebner was the referee, and I'm going to start referring to Earl as Earl Edwards because he is the Aubrey Edwards of the 1990s. And for all those people that say, oh, we just complain about Aubrey's histrionics during a match in today's era, man, Earl Hebner was trying to get himself over. I realize that everybody goes on about what a great referee he was, but I'm sorry. He was never my cup of tea. Even back in the 80s when we had the double referee switch with Hogan and Andre that time, it felt like Earl tries to get himself over.
Can you name more than 5 referees off the top of your head, though? Because there's only a few that I can name, like Charles Robinson, Earl Hebner, and Aubrey. Like, I can't name a bunch of other ones. You have a list of referees that you can name? Because
I do.
If they're not that kind of referee, you don't know who the hell they are.
Well, we've got Tim White, who is in this pay-per-view.
Hall of Famer Tim White. That's fair.
Jimmy Corderas, good guy from Canada.
Of course, you're going to be able to unlist a whole list of referees. I asked the wrong person. This was a mistake. I should have known that. As soon as I said it, I was like, oh, just ask the brain. He knows everything about wrestling in the world.
All right, I'll stop there. I won't mention Nick Patrick or Joey Morella or Pee Wee Anderson, who I'm going to rail about in the nitro part of the show as well, because he was just as bad as Earl Hebner. But yeah, all right. I'm not a big fan of referees who get too involved in the action and come off as too much of the match. I'm okay with a little bit where they're needed, but when it becomes I'm watching the ref more than the match, it's a problem.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. That's a fair statement.
All right, so then we go to our next match, which interesting little fumble here for the special, and that's what I find back at this time period. There's a lot of fumbles for WWF which in this day and age, Vince McMahon would kill somebody if these things happen. But we actually had the ring announcer start to announce Nature Boy Buddy Rydell, which is actually an incorrect name. It's actually Buddy Landell, but he mentioned Nature Boy Buddy Rydell, and then all of a sudden just quickly stopped because he screwed up. He wasn't supposed to do this at this point, because Jerry the King Lawler jumps on the mic to try to cut him off and starts walking into the ring because he has a big announcement to make. I guess this was his big surprise. We have a return to the WWF, and it is none other than Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
What a team of heels. What a duo of monster heels. Like, if we put together a list of the greatest heels, these two guys should be on it. I'll go ahead and put it on the mountaintop right now. These two guys, generational heels, both of them, especially Jeff Jarrett, but Jerry Lawler as well, deserves every bit of the commotion that comes with everything that he does. He is such a walking artifact of chaos.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he really
and
is.
And I love it. I love every second of it. And that's the reason why I think I lean towards liking this pay-per-view a little bit more than not, because we get awfulness in wrestling, like, almost every time. Like, following this, we have the sacrifice of Buddy Landell. Like,
yes.
They just sacrifice an NWA legend in front of our eyes. They're like, let's just go and burn him at the stake and let Ahmed Johnson just destroy him mentally and physically. So we can have this great segment between, I guess, Ahmed as a face. Is that what that is?
Ahmed is a face. Yes. An awkward face. I'll put it that way. He's a more of an attitude era face.
Yeah. Great promo though. Achy breaky heart. Wannabe fake. And then I don't know if you watch with subtitles, but it said inaudible for half of his promo because even the subtitles couldn't read it. Like, it got to a point where he was just screaming and they're like, we give up.
Ahmed is famous for his incoherent promos. So you had a hard time. That's what I mentioned in the last episode, is I actually was able to understand Ahmed's entire promo, which was a rarity for me. So I knew what he was saying. But in this one, so just a prelude to the match, Lawler introduces Jeff Jarrett, presents him with a gold record for his hit record, Ain't I Great, which of course had that fantastic hit song with my
baby
tonight.
Baby tonight, wasn't it?
Now I'm gonna say this, I'm gonna put this out there right now, that's a great song.
Great, like, song.
I put that out there with like any country song of the day. That blows Achy Breaky Heart. Yeah, for sure. I play that on the regular back in the day. But yeah, but now Double J is going to have a new tour where it's going to be Greater Than Great, which is a fantastic name, such a wrestling heel name for a tour.
Jeff's just amazing.
And I think that tour is going on right now.
He's very slowly, like, selling too. Like, the best part about his heel work is he is slow and methodical in everything he does. Every maneuver he makes, he's very, very slow. Even to the point where at one point the King makes an awful joke and he goes, hey, that's funny. It wasn't funny. It wasn't funny at all. He's a good partner and he's a bad guy. And I love that. I'd hang out with Jeff Jarrett, I think. I'd probably take the record in the back of the head for it, but, you know, whatever.
Well, speaking of records in the back of the head, so we do finally get to our match. It is the aforementioned Ahmed Johnson against Nature Boy Buddy Landell. As you mentioned, a legend of the NWA, a legend of the Southern Wrestling Circuit. And it's a 45-second squash for poor old Buddy Landell. But I will say this, don't feel bad for Buddy, because there was some other stuff coming for him. But Taylor, what's your familiarity with Mr. Landell himself?
Not a whole lot. I've watched a little bit of his NWA stuff, but I don't dig deep enough into old school like you do to know a whole lot. I knew the name right out the gate because he's a pretty well a household name, but I don't know a whole bunch else about him. I've seen a match or two here or there, but I don't know that I've ever really watched a promo or anything. Was he the original Nature Boy?
No, he wasn't. Actually, the original Nature Boy was Buddy Rogers, and that's who Ric Flair stole the Nature Boy gimmick from. And, of course, Ric Flair being the Nature Boy before Buddy Landell. But Buddy Landell, he came from the Mid-South area, and if you go onto the Peacock Network right now, they have Mid-South Wrestling right around from 82 and on, and Buddy Landell is in Mid-South in 82 and 83. Just a young whippersnapper at that point. He's got black hair. And a good physique at that point as well. He was, you could tell he was very skilled in the ring. And that's when he started, he went to NWA, went under the tutelage of J.J. Dillon. If you watch any of Jim Crocker promotion stuff from 1985, Buddy Landell is in there promoting himself as the real Nature Boy and trying to spark a feud with Ric Flair. And he was getting over, man. The guy can go in the ring and go on the microphone. And rumor has it that in 1985, Ric Flair was going to drop the title to Buddy Landell. Woo. For a quick run for Buddy Landell. They were talking around Starrcade, and Buddy's one problem that he had is he liked to enjoy some of the stuff that goes on outside the ring.
So are we talking about a little sniffy whiffy, or are we talking about a little hooch?
We're talking about a lot of things, but yeah, one of his famous sayings was, "If it don't snow, we don't go." That was Buddy's famous.
It's a great
saying.
Line. It's not a funny line, but it's a great line.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, and he got a little bit mouthy and a little bit lippy with the promoters there, and unfortunately, he ended up getting fired. So he never got that sniff, ironically enough, at the NWA World Heavyweight Title. But that's Buddy Landell. In the next episode, I'll talk a little bit more about him because there's some more coming up as far as what he's doing on Raw. But yeah, so the weird thing about this match, so we have a 45-second match. Then you have the King interviewing Ahmed outside the ring, as you mentioned, and very hard to make out what he's saying, just about an achy, breaky heart wannabe type of thing. And then Jeff Jarrett jumps him, smashes that beautiful gold record right off the head of Ahmed. And who would have thunk it? Somebody gets presented a nice gold record in the ring. Where, what's going to happen to that in WWF? Well, it's just like a wedding cake. It's going to go in somebody's face.
Storytelling.
Yeah. And then you have a beatdown by Double J, and he's really putting it to Ahmed. And then he makes one crucial mistake where I think this is a little off script because he grabs Dean Douglas's paddle, which Dean Douglas had brought to the ring. And oh, I should mention the reason why Buddy Landell was fighting is because Dean Douglas was injured at this time.
With quotes around it.
Yeah, well, actually, I'll mention something about that in a second, but he ends up paddling Ahmed Johnson, and all of a sudden, Ahmed just stops and no-sells, and I don't think Ahmed was expecting the paddle to come out, because it got scary for a second, and even Jarrett looked like he's running for his life at that point, because he just took off and started down the alley, and, you know, Ahmed's chased him, and then just got into an awkward pull-apart for the chair, and what do you think? Was that off script, or do you think that was...
It's hard to tell because Jarrett is such a good actor. Like, mm-hmm. He is a great chicken shit heel. Like, I don't know if I can say shit on your podcast. Go I'm right sorry ahead. If I just it's offended fine. All your listeners. But as far as chicken shit heel goes, Jarrett's the best. He's incredible at chicken shit heel. Like, there's nobody you can put on a list of chicken shit heels that's better than him. And I will put out, that's another thing. That's why I think he's a great, great heel. Not just because he can draw heat almost better than anybody else, but he also was really good at running away.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good at it. And there's like the only other person on that list to me is The Miz. There's nobody even close to those two. And like, they're both really, really good at it. And every time they show up, you're like, man, for a minute, you're like, yeah, geez, I don't want him to win, but he might steal this again and just run away into the night. Like, he does it every time. And Jarrett's so good at that. That's why as soon as I saw him, I was just like, yes, right now we've got it. This is exactly what we want. Why wouldn't you want it? And I don't imagine there's a ton of people lining up to work with Ahmed Johnson at this point either.
No, not necessarily. And pretty much in the future, that's going to be an even smaller list because he tends to injure people too. Not the smoothest guy ever. But interesting side note to this this appearance. This was Dean Douglas's last appearance for the WWF. It wasn't his last day working for him, but it was his last appearance on TV for the WWF. He would end up going to a show at Madison Square Garden. He was diagnosed with severe muscle spasm in the back. So actually, it was a legit injury. The only problem was is Vince McMahon didn't believe him. And he became very angry at Dean Douglas and forced him to go out and do a promo that night. And basically, this is why Shane Douglas, who is Dean Douglas, has hard feelings for the WWF even to this day. And yeah, so this would be the last time we would see Dean Douglas. And what a crazy ride for him in the WWF. He went from being this potential star, wins the Intercontinental title, loses it within a minute to Razor Ramon, and then here you go. He's just out the next day. I made a mistake. It's his last pay-per-view appearance. He will have one more appearance on Raw the following night. But yeah, so, Dean Douglas.
A special place for Dean Douglas that there very few wrestlers have went. I put him on the list of a problematic all-star. Like, there's people that are just so damn talented, and it's amazing that they haven't been able to get farther in the world than they have. Him and Austin Aries and CM Punk. CM Punk's another one that he's gotten really far, but every time he gets somewhere, he tends to fuck it up.
Yep.
Dean Douglas, Shane Douglas is another one of those guys to me. You know what I mean? Like, he gets everywhere he wants to go, and then he's like, let me just blow it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. That's a good way to put it. It's like he believes his own press clippings, and then he decides, you know what? It's time to destroy this. So let's do it. All right. So then we went from there. We went to Todd Pettengill backstage having a talk with old Razor Ramon. And at the very end of it, he's like, oh, by the way, Razor, I have this nice letter from Goldust. Can't believe I forgot to give this to you. So here you go. And then Razor reads it, gets a look of disgust on his face, crumples it up into a ball and tosses it aside. And he looks like he's on the search for Mr. Goldust. So intriguing. I wonder what that note says.
I imagine he just quoted more graduate, or he went ahead and put Gone with the Wind quotes in there. Who knows? Probably some other movies from the 60s and 70s. You know, he's a film historian, so why would he not?
maybe something from Deep Throat. Who knows?
It's always The Graduate. Do you ever notice that? Writers love The Graduate. Like, I'm sure that there was a writer in the back room. They were like, what should we say? We're obviously going to have you just flirting and talking about his hairy chest, but there's got to be an opening line. And someone was, The Graduate. I love The Graduate. It's every time. I don't understand what the deal is with writers in the movie The Graduate. It happens. I've been watching Boy Meets World for like the last month. They reference The Graduate like 8 times in that show for no reason. It's weird.
Do you think maybe it's just that they're probably kind of, I don't know, nerds who have this fantasy about this happening to them?
Yeah, that's fair. In the basement.
All right, so now we move on to my favorite part of the show. It's the Arkansas Hogpen match between Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Henry O. Godwin. So it's HHH versus HOG. Were you excited for this?
Yes, Godwin is goated. Absolutely a goated character in WWE. No one will ever agree with me. This is another one of my Buff Bagwells that I will defend vigorously until the end of my life. There are about 3 wrestlers on this pay-per-view that I put in this goated thing that everybody's just like, dude, stop it. They're not any good. Henry Godwin is amazing. And everybody that complains about creativity and how there's nothing new that ever happens in wrestling is an idiot. Because every review I read, they're just like, why would you do a hog match? It's such a stupid idea. Wrestling's better than this. Can we take this sport seriously? And it's like, no, it's entertainment. You're watching a pay-per-view to be entertained. Enjoy a hog match. What more do you want than the snooty guy from Massachusetts being thrown in a pile of slop? What more do you want?
It makes the most sense. He's a hillbilly. He farms. He has pigs. Of course. You know, that's his style of match.
Goated, you know, my boy.
Like, just like Shane McMahon with his Greenwich Street street fights. You know, that's what you have.
Yep. Yep. I'd love more dumpster matches with Duke Droz, too.
Yeah, exactly.
All characters should have their own special match. Every special character. I'd enjoy that.
I think they should.
Electrician's Hell for Shockmaster. An Electrician's Hell match.
What would Triple H's, you know, the this era, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, what would his specialty match be?
It'd probably be like just robes everywhere. Suede robes. Everybody has to wear a robe in this match. It's a robe match.
Or you have to smoke a pipe and wear
a robe.
You're forced to spend time at a snooty party at a yacht club or something like that, right?
Talking about The Graduate.
Yes. Oh, man. A couple of notes from this. I think they played a little prank on Mr. Tony Chimel to start things off where old Henry goes to slop Triple H and he ends up firing it onto Tony Chimel. And he got him
buried. Tony Chimel. He buried him in slop.
Vince is like, that poor young man. It's like, yeah, dude, you totally paid him an extra $100 just to do that. And then what else do we have? Oh, I have to say, Hillbilly Jim, man. Like, I know that this is way beyond his years. And I mean, you're a Hillbilly Jim fan from the Legends House series, but he looked good here. He was moving good. He looked jacked up. He looked like he could still go have a nice little run.
I also found him to be a really funny character, too. Like, throughout the olden days, like, people don't, like, give him enough respect for just being ironically funny. Like, he's not trying to be funny. But I was recreating that Thanksgiving segment where, you know, they give their thanks the other day. Yeah. And he's in it, and he's, like, in the background with, like, five wrestlers, and I could not take my eyes off him. Because he has that voice. He's just like, yeah, I'm thankful for... And I'm just like, yes, you're my man. Do it, Hillbilly Jim. Do it. I'm just thankful for the birds and the sun and the moon above.
Oh, man, the old hillbilly. There's not enough hillbillies in wrestling today.
I swear, where's Ted at when you need him?
I mean, could you see MJF in a hogpen match? I totally could see that now.
Oh, yeah. They should do that, by the way. Yeah. If Tony's listening to this, Tony, put your thinking cap on, Tony.
Yep, MJF swimming around in pig feces is always
good. Who's the hillbilly that he faces, though? Do they got a hillbilly?
No, they create a hillbilly. You got to create one. They need more characters there anyway.
Well, I mean, Briscoe, kind of.
True. Yeah. Yeah. You could have that. Yeah. Yeah. You could have like a chicken pen match with Briscoe.
Yeah.
Same idea. Yeah.
I was just really worried that one of those pigs was going to get hurt the whole match.
Yeah. Especially with the backdrop into the pen with Henry going into the pen. So I should mention that it was Triple H who ends up winning this. The other thing I want to mention is, did you see the nasty gash on Triple H's back from when he went into the metal, doorway of the pen?
Yep, paying his dues.
Me being an old geezer now, all I could think about, instead of like, oh, this is so cool, Triple H is gonna get his comeuppance and he gets body slammed into the pen, I'm thinking, oh god, I hope he doesn't get like some kind of disease from the E. coli in the pig feces, right?
Stomach virus.
Oh man, that's gonna put him out for a while.
He's got the best doctors money can buy, don't worry. He's rich from Massachusetts, don't forget.
I know I wasn't thinking about that when I was a kid and enjoying this, but when now, well, I say a kid, I was like 20 at the time, but now I'm just like, I'm like, no, I got to think about what disease did he pick up from that. But anyways, I thought this was an entertaining match. It didn't spend the whole time around the hog pen. It was in the ring. It was outside the ring. They put some stiff shots on each other. I will say that. And you're right. Henry Godwin does not get enough credit. That dude is a big old corn-fed colossus that could go in that ring.
Character man, too, though. A character man. And I always, again, will respect a character man every day of the week.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But overall, this was probably, might have been my favorite match of the night. And what was even better, and even Triple H had to be in on the prank. You notice when he was doing the slipping and falling in the slop, he would grab handfuls of it and toss it into the crowd as he would go down.
Great salesman. He's really, really selling those Three Stooges style falls that he's doing in the slop. Yes.
Great. And how about the aim on the fan who hit him square in the snout with a Coke cup?
Great shot, man. I was going to say, dude, somebody sign that, man. The Lions are looking for a quarterback in a couple years. We're going to bang out Jared Goff. I'll pick up the man who threw the soda in your house, number five.
I swear to God, it's like there's something about wrestling fans and throwing cokes, and wrestlers must go to school to non-sell that, because if you remember the famous clip of Razor when he gets clocked with one off the hair, all he does is keep on walking and smooths the hair out with the pop that's in his hair.
He's just too cool. That's
He's just so cool.
It's not just that he oozes machismo and he has a gloriously hairy chest, as Goldust would say. It's also that he has the ability to just be way too cool in any situation. I just don't understand it. I'll never have that ability to just it's so smooth. It's like a duck. He just lets everything run off of him.
Yeah.
All the machismo just running off of him.
He is machismo. That's what he is.
I mean,
if that had to hit me in the ring, I'd be like, my eye, come on.
Ow! Why? Why'd you do that? Who throws a Coke? Who throws a Coke?
I'd be like Peter Griffin with the, Oh man, all right, rest in peace Scott Hall, one of the all-time greats. Hey folks, it's BC here. I want to say thank you for supporting Wrestling with the War. I really appreciate you tuning into this episode. If you're looking for some more fantastic podcasts to listen to once you're done with this one, why don't you check out these great content creators we are proud to call friends of the show. The Wrestling Fans Insight Podcast with John, William, Carlos, and Heather, which is a great take on the modern wrestling product. The Apron Bump Podcast, where Kyle takes a walk down wrestling's memory lane, as well as talks about the current product. And Today We Laughed and Learned, where Chris and Deb take a humorous spin on learning about history. Thank you once again, and I hope you enjoy all these selections. From there, we went to a funny ad for the Royal Rumble, and it looks like they're kind of stepping away from the new generation and going into what would be more a bit of Attitude Era, where we had the little bit where the kid spits, or the guy spits the ice cube into the woman's cleavage and all that stuff, which
Weird ad full of
very weird
intergender wrestling matches all over a couch between people just fighting over a Royal Rumble.
Who looked like they intended Triple H's party, actually.
Yeah, they probably were just finishing talking about The Graduate.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we had a very, very quick match between Owen Hart and Diesel. Diesel, who is kind of a tweener at this point. You know, if you're wearing the black glove, you're on his side. But if not, screw you, is what Diesel's saying to everybody. It felt like Diesel's pyro smoke lingered longer than the match itself, because for a while they were wrestling in the fog. But yeah, thoughts on this quickie?
Worst match of the night.
Yeah.
100% the worst match of the night. Everything about this was bad. There was no selling. Owen Hart did his best, but it was disgraceful to do this to Owen Hart. Why couldn't you get a jobber to do this? You couldn't. You had to stick a great wrestler that's a technical god in there to just get slaughtered and powerbombed. Also, when he walks, Kevin Nash or Diesel or whatever we're calling him nowadays, yeah, I feel the pain in every step of his knees.
Yeah.
When I walk, I have that same problem. So I can see someone with knee problems right away from very, very far away. And as soon as he started coming out, I was like, his knees hurt.
Oh, yeah. I mean, didn't he mention recently he's had like something like 15 knee surgeries or something like that? It's just ridiculous. I mean, a dude 7 foot tall, that much muscle.
It doesn't help to be that big and that size. It doesn't help. But like, he's in a lot of pain, and you can tell right away that he's in a lot of pain. And you got to think, he went, 10 years after this?
Oh, yeah.
More?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, if he was already in pain at this point, God, I can't imagine how bad it got.
It was weird too, because the whole point of him taking the match with Owen is apparently he was trying to get revenge on Owen for bragging about putting Sean out, because Sean's out with the concussion thanks to the Owen super kick. But really, he didn't. It's not like he vanquished Owen or anything like that. He got disqualified for pushing the referee down, puts a jackknife on Owen, and that's pretty much it. And then he walks around the ring signaling that he wants the belt, you know, doing that sign, you know, with the waist. And I'm thinking to myself, well, actually there, Diesel, you've actually catapulted Owen up the ranks higher than you are for the belt, because he just got the win by disqualification. So not exactly the brightest move.
Moving backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moving backwards. Yeah. Not, there wasn't a lot of sensicalness to anything that happened in this match. Definitely. I think people are going to rate the match after this a little bit worse if you look at the reviews. Mm-hmm. But they're wrong. This match was a sack of poo.
It was. It wasn't great. So let's not spend too much time on it. We then go from there to the backstage superstar line with Triple H and Henry O. Godwin on there. Again, kudos to Triple H. He's on the phone with covered in pig shit. You know, that's impressive. And old Sonny was sitting next to him, taking a whiff of it the whole time. Maybe that was a joke on her. I don't know.
A couple of really great sellers again. Both of them were selling their asses off. Sonny knows how to what it smells like when there's something stinking in the room. So she immediately knew that. She was like, nope, get me out of here.
And then in typical WWF fare, because once we got to always revert back to the kids stuff, we had Santa Claus come out with Savio Vega, and we had Ted DiBiase in the ring. So it seemed like there was an ultimate setup coming here. DiBiase is claiming that he can buy anybody, and he's going to buy Santa. And not before he asks Savio if he believes in Santa. And I don't know what Savio said during the segment, because
he said he does. He says, I believe in Santa. I do believe in Santa. And then Santa proceeds to just attack him.
He did.
Tricky thing they did, though. I did a little research into this Santa segment. This is my most researched segment of the pay-per-view, by the way. I did a lot of research into this segment. And he is Santa's evil brother. This is in canon. This is Santa's evil brother. Do you know what his name is?
Santa Claus with an
X. Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. Santa Claus, which I'm not really sure what that is, but that's what it is. And you obviously know who he is then, don't you?
I do. Want to tell the audience who's playing Santa Claus?
That is Balls Mahoney, one of my favorite ECW wrestlers right there. Again, right. A big boy who gets to wear whatever he wants. He can rip up his jeans and hit people with chairs. And sometimes he can wear a Santa suit.
You know, it's funny because also I'll add to it. He's Santa's evil brother from the South Pole. Now, was Great he writing. Born on the South Pole or did he move to the South Pole? I'm trying to figure that out. That's the
well,
other
they put side. Him on opposite poles because they don't get along.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Is Ted DiBiase the worst investor in the world with how he spends his money?
He just doesn't. He's got so much. He doesn't have to care about good or bad investments.
Yeah.
He can support whoever he wants to.
But you think about it. He's only $1 million man. He's not $1 billion man. I mean, $1 million can get used up pretty quickly. I mean, he's investing in like the 123 kid. He had Kama. He had Nikolai Volkov. I mean, come on. He spent money on Nikolai Volkov. He's, you know,
how much money do you think he's paying all these people? I imagine he's just buying them like McDonald's meals, McDouble bundles or something.
Well, you know, you got to have a minimum wage, I imagine, don't you, though? Like, he's got to be giving Nikolai $15 an hour, I imagine, or something like that.
Back then, there was no minimum wage. $4.50 an hour, brother.
$4.50. But, you know, I mean, to spend the money on an evil Santa Claus that you're going to have turn heel and Savio Vega, I don't know. I think I would have still been trying to buy that WWF title.
I don't know how much Santas get paid at the mall, but if anything from The Simpsons is true, I think Homer got paid like $150 to be Santa. That's what I imagine that he got paid, was like $150 to come out there and, you know, be a bad guy. Santa Claus.
I feel like this is literally the situation where it was a hot dog and a handshake was the payment.
I'm really, really glad that Balls Mahoney got here. How many years ahead of ECW is this?
Well, is stay in ECW, you mean?
Well, yeah. Balls Mahoney in ECW.
I'd say maybe a year or so ahead
of
that.
Oh, we're not far off then. No, I thought it was a lot earlier than that. I didn't look at the date because, you know, I'm not very good at this.
No, and I mean, that's the other thing. Like, keep in mind that Vince was kind of bankrolling ECW at this point, and he was using it as a grounds for developing wrestlers and stuff like that. Wasn't known at the time, of course. Nobody realized that was what's happening. But yeah, so that's, I think, why you're going to see a few, like Al Snow was in an episode not that long ago as Avatar. Just a few different people that are coming from these different areas. Right?
So, I mean, Shane Douglas, that's your Mount Rushmore of ECW almost right there, right?
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, Santa Claus, I'm sure he's going to be probably world champion in the next few months there.
I don't care what anybody says. Great segment. A plus segment. There's a bunch of these in this. This is the second A plus segment I'm giving of the night right here. That's an A plus segment.
Now, you want to talk about A plus segments? Well, we're going to talk about this next match. This is Mabel versus The Undertaker in a casket match. So we have a little Easter egg here. An individual, we've been talking about this on our Wrestling with the War podcast, about all the different people that we're seeing from modern era that were jobbers or were just background people. We've seen Rhino be a person carrying a throne for Mabel. We've seen who else in the ring? Just a few different people in the ring, but we have a very special individual that is carrying the throne. And honest to God, I don't know how he was handling it. I mean, that's 500 pounds on top of a big throne, but it was a young Jeff Hardy.
Wow. I missed that.
You missed that?
Yeah, I missed that completely.
Oh, wow. Okay. So yeah, Jeff Hardy was at the front when they're coming out and they've got the throne carrying Mabel. Take a look. He's on the, if you're watching it, he'd be on the left-hand side. So it's Jeff Hardy who would actually have a match the next week against Owen Hart, if you can believe that.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
I guess he earned his due by carrying him.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Hardy boys were all over WWF television back in 95, but as jobbers, not as the Hardy Boy stars that we know.
Well, I'm glad that sometimes you pay your dues and you get rewarded for it because
exactly.
Good for Jeff and good for Matt.
Oh yeah, for sure. We had Jeff Hardy helping carry out the throne. And then we also had the Phantom Taker as the Undertaker was wearing his Phantom of the Opera mask. And the reason why is because he basically had his orbital bone broken by Mr. Mabel himself. what are your thoughts on this match? Wasn't a long one.
Before we get into that, is there like backstage fodder to this? Was Undertaker mad that his orbital bone got broken, or was he just like roll with it and keep moving? Because there's two sides to Mark, and it's always like one or the other. He's really mad about something that happened, and he'll take you to wrestler court and see how to deal with it. And then there's the other guy that's like, all right, it's business. Let's keep moving.
I don't think he was too pleased about it. I'll tell you this. The entire WWF and management team wasn't very pleased about it. This is ironically pretty much the end of the run for Mabel. He's gone after Royal Rumble in January because he had a history of injuring wrestlers and being pretty reckless in the ring. One of the stories was that Vince McMahon almost fired Mabel after the SummerSlam 95 match against Diesel because he'd been doing that move where he sits down on guys' chest. And most times, a guy like Earthquake or Yokozuna, they kind of brace it with their feet so that they're not actually getting the full weight on it. Well, Mabel wouldn't do that. He'd actually just crash down with his full weight on people, and he was injuring multiple wrestlers. And Diesel specifically told him, don't you dare do that move during the match. And not only did Mabel do it, but he did it to Diesel while Diesel was on his stomach. So he did it on his lower back, which basically caused a pretty bad tear, I think, to his abdominal wall. So not good. So Vince almost fired him on the spot after SummerSlam 95. It was Diesel, ironically enough, who saved his job. And then here he goes. He injures Undertaker. Now, apparently it was accidental. They played it off as being from a bunch of leg drops that he did on an episode of Raw. But what it actually was, I believe, was a house show. He punched Undertaker in the eye by mistake. He didn't pull his punch enough and cracked the orbital bone. But I think he was on thin ice at this point. And you could tell by the match because it was the shortest casket match in history. I think it was all of 5 minutes.
Every character he had after this is a great character. This is the worst of his characters, in my opinion. Everything that he did after this is like, give me more, give me more. Like Viscera, the Love Machine, Big Daddy V. I'll take every bit of every character he had. This is the worst of all of them, honestly. And like, I love a big guy. I really, really do. This match is interesting to me because of all the backstage stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. I really like Mo. Like, I think the idea of melting down the urn into a chain is a great heel tactic, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Great heel tactic. Definitely going to make people really, really, really dislike you because The Undertaker is a very huge star, and why wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. It wasn't a great match by any stretch of the imagination. You're right, 5 minutes. I don't think he could have went a lot more than 5 minutes, which is why I think they let him take a little rest in the casket while we figured everything out as far as getting his buddy in there with him. But I don't know, enjoyment phase? Like, I don't know. Like, so as far as a wrestling match, an F. But as far as entertaining, a C.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not as bad as it could have been. There's worse.
Well, we didn't need to see a 30-minute classic from them. I'll put it that way. They weren't going to have that.
I like this better than I liked Eddie Kingston versus Jericho.
There you go. The other thing I made note of is he looked pretty dumb with the fact that he had the Taker in the casket and for some reason didn't know how to close the lid and then decided to do a strut and then try to close the lid.
I've never handled a casket before. Is that a thing that we can really knock him on? I don't think a ton of people have just like had a lot of interactions with closing and opening caskets or carrying caskets. Like, to be honest, like I've carried one casket for my mom, but to be honest, I don't think I've carried or opened or closed any other caskets. Honestly, if you give me the opportunity to close a casket, I'd probably take a few minutes to try and figure out how it works too. Poor Mabel always gets a bad rap.
Well, I give him some slack if it was a traditional casket, you know, the kind that like, you know, that you see at a funeral home. But this is literally a box with a lid that the referees are holding up. And all he has to do is just grab it and slam it. That's it.
So I tried to defend him. I really, really tried to put my best foot forward out and go lawyer mode so I could get Mabel out of this whole situation. But you're right. It was just a big wood chunk of wood that you just closed. There was nothing to it. It's just a door.
Oh, I appreciate that, though. I appreciate you sticking up for the big guy. But poor old Mabel. He not only does he get put in the casket, but old Mo goes in there as well. Taker takes about 10 minutes standing over the casket to grab his melted down urn just to bury them a little bit more. And then he slams the lid on the casket. And we're done with the whole Undertaker-Mabel feud. And I will say this. Over the span of this watching 95 Wrestling, I have gained a new appreciation for the Mabel character because the guy actually is pretty damn skilled for a big dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking a big 500-plus, 6'9" dude, and he can go in that ring.
You've watched a lot of, like, Earthquake and stuff, and that dude mm-hmm. is, like, the hallmark of big guys, though.
Yes.
So when you see stuff like John Tenta, and then you watch stuff like Mabel, it's like, oh, gosh, man. But like you said, for his size, it's amazing he can run it all. It's amazing he can bounce off the ropes and jump. Like, I'm amazed at everything he does. But like I said, there are people that are really, really good at this, and he's not one of those. Nobody's ever going to call him the best wrestler in the world.
I will say this. During that match, the rock bottom style slam that he gave to Undertaker was pretty impressive.
What'd they call it? Was it a fallaway slam? Is that
something like
that?
Yeah. I think it was a fallaway slam. Yeah. But it was impressive looking, especially doing it on such a big guy like the Undertaker.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot.
All right. Well, from there, we're going into our main event of the evening. It's Bret the Hitman Hart defending the WWF World Heavyweight Championship against his brother-in-law, Davey Boy Smith, who is being accompanied to the ring by the great Jim Cornette and his wife, Diana Smith, who is a little stiff. We'll just say that.
It was, what do you think of this? Because I have a lot of interesting thoughts about this, and I've seen technical masterpieces from these guys before. Mm-hmm. So I know that other matches I've seen of theirs have been like maybe some of the best wrestling matches I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
This was really, really good.
Yeah.
But like once you've had an all-timer, it's hard to roll it back and have another all-timer.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I'll tell you, it was a very slow start to this match. But then once it started going, which is pretty much the point where Bret gets sliced open, that's when it really picked up and it turned into a pretty good match. Now, it's interesting because they had their battle at Wembley Stadium where they were both faces versus now you got Davey Boy playing the heel. So Davey Boy, I think, intentionally was going with more of a heel slower style, and that slowed it down a bit at the beginning. Just it gives chance for Bret to do a lot of selling at that point. I will mention, I did get a kick out of right off the get-go. They do a shot of Davey Boy before the match starts, and Jerry Lawler is very particular to mention that. Check out the tights on Bulldog. He's wearing the same tights he did in Wembley Stadium in 92. And if anybody has the benefit of the internet, which maybe they didn't have back then, but I think in 95 you had that, they aren't the same tights that he was wearing at Wembley in 92. So that was interesting. Exactly.
Does Bret... Okay, so I kind of Googled this to try and get an idea if I was off base on this. He doesn't bleed a ton. Can't think of a ton of instances where Bret bleeds, this being one of them. Yep. Maybe one other one. The only other one I could really find was him and Piper.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Is there another one that you can think of off top? Because I don't see Bret almost ever bleed. Like, that's why when it happened, and I know I stopped it and rewinded it to kind of figure out where he bladed at, because there's an obvious point where he blades. And I was trying, like, the first couple times I watched it, I was like, man, I didn't catch it. Where was it? And then there's just a puddle of blood. You know what I mean? Yeah. But he bladed himself like 10 seconds earlier than the puddle of blood when he was by the stairs. Yep. And then he went walking, and that's when the blood really started to pour. Yep. So I don't know if maybe Bret isn't super good at blading himself, but he overshot.
He is. Well, he's actually a master of it because he's the one that actually bladed Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13.
I did not know that.
Yeah, because he wanted to, because there was a no blading policy at that point. So if for some reason Vince caught them and he was going to fire somebody, Bret wanted to take the heat so that he knew he wasn't going to get fired by Vince McMahon. Stone Cold at this point was not, you know, super mega over Stone Cold. So he was still, he had a chance of getting in trouble. So Bret took the heat on that one. But yeah, there's not too many matches in WWF where Bret bled. I mean, of course, in his Calgary days and stuff like that, he bled buckets and things like that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the most memorable one being the Roddy Piper match from WrestleMania 8 in 92. But man, when he bled in this one, he hit a gusher. One of the things I had to laugh at was there was the woman at ringside that when Bret, like, basically he flipped his hair and the blood went splattering. You could see her go like, oh my God, it's Bret's blood on in my arm. And then she's like, yeah,
I'm bleeding. Woo!
So there's like this 50-year-old woman at ringside screaming, go Bret. And she's got like, she kept looking down at the blood in her arm. I'm wondering if she's like going to sell that on eBay or something.
My favorite type of wrestling fan is a 50-year-old woman that doesn't mind getting bled on just a little bit.
Oh, man. But yeah, he was bleeding buckets. Yeah, it was a good battle back and forth. Brett, with an interesting way to win, he just is like a little roll up. He locks the arm, rolls him up into a little small package, and gets the three count on Davey. And now, right before that, Davey almost broke his neck on that turnbuckle whip, if you remember that. So maybe, I don't know, maybe Davey was hurting him a little bit at that point. But
what was the other match that they had that's so highly regarded? Was it SummerSlam?
SummerSlam 92.
Yeah. And that was what, 3 or 4 years ahead before this, or?
Yes. Yeah. That was 92. This is 95. So yeah, it's 3 years beforehand.
That's the one I was talking about. Like, if you're looking for a technical masterpiece, that's a technical masterpiece. And I think that what this does is it shows you that he is not pigeonholed to one type of match.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, really put Brett in a box of being just a technical wrestler, and he can do everything. There's nothing he can't do. And this just shows you that he doesn't have to do a 30-minute clinic to show you that he's a good wrestler.
That's
he has
right.
the ability to sell, and he has the ability to make you believe in him and think that he's going to lose and hit these false finishes, and he can do everything. Brett's the whole package, and I think people often will say, can't talk. He can talk.
He can't talk,
and he can do it all, and I think that this is one of those things that proves that, and there's a bunch of matches with Brett that I think are masterpieces, a very early running for the most 5-star matches at this time, because he was just banging them all day long.
Yeah, I mean, the guys, well, he's my favorite of all time, and it's just because he does such a great job of combining the great match with the story. And yeah, his promo style wasn't, you know, as outrageous as Hogan or as intense as Stone Cold, but it felt real. His promos felt real. It's just like some tough dude from Canada that, you know, he's just going to go in there and do what he says he's going to do. And that's, I'm okay with that.
Is it a Canada thing?
I think it is. Honestly, I think it's just more we're laid back and we're just kind of not as flamboyant. So that's kind of the way
it is. Do you tend to draw in like your favorite wrestlers are often Canadian? If they're Canadian, does that make you like them more?
No, actually it doesn't, because, you know, like it's like I'm not like a massive Jericho fan. I'm not like a massive Edge fan or anything like that. Really, Brett's the one guy. But after that, it would be Hogan and Savage and then Stone Cold. And, you know, so it's not a Canada thing. I love the guys from the South because they're just, again, they were real. Those guys made it feel real, like an Arn Anderson or, you know, a Tully Blanchard or something like that. It feels real with that. And that's what attracts me to it. Like Bret Hart and the NWA in 85, 86, 87 would have been magic.
Yeah, he would have. That style just fits almost perfectly, man. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see you go back in time and just announce all those matches.
I just like to watch them. I want to go back to 85, 86 to Charlotte and hang out with Ted at all these events.
Oh, he'd love that. Trust me. He'd love to just hop in that time machine right with you and just hit them all. Did Undertaker also do a belt motion like Kevin Nash did in his match?
He did.
Is there a little bit too much of let me have a belt?
Well, I get it for Taker because he doesn't really speak a lot, so that's what he had to do. But it was really weird looking to see Taker motion for the belt. It's not the guy that you're used to seeing do that, right? But yeah, and that leads to our final segment of the night. So usually you finish off with a champ, but they decided to go backstage and they had a little interview with the Taker, and they announced that he's the new number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship. So he's going to be facing Bret Hart at Royal Rumble. And old Mr. Diesel wasn't too happy about it because, of course, after getting disqualified, he should be the new number one contender. Because
I lost. Why don't I get a shot?
Yeah, Owen should be the one in there that's claiming that he's a number one contender.
Owen was in the hospital. He powerbombed him too hard.
The two funniest things about this backstage segment, Diesel was fine in it, but it was when he walks in, Paul Bearer was kind of funny because he said, "Oh, Big Daddy Cool, you're not being so cool right now."
Percy's the best. Another chubby guy that should get more love. You gotta love. This is the theme of the pay-per-view. Chubby guys need more love. That's what I got out of this whole pay-per-view. Is you've got Mabel and you've got Henry Godwin and you've got Percy Pringle, aka Paul Bearer. I love
Santa
every
Claus.
Chubby guy.
You got
more
Santa
and more
Claus.
Chubby guys. I would watch a whole wrestling show just filled with chubby guys.
Well, you do need a more chubby guys in wrestling. There's just too much of the same, right?
They don't take them seriously. That's the problem now, is anytime there's a chubby guy or a fat guy, they just put him under the dirt, and they don't ever make him a comedy character. Otis could really be a monster if you let him out the box.
He could. And, you know, unless your name's Keith Lee, then they'll call you the amazing. But yeah, it's like,
hey, man. Yeah. They've done him a little bit wrong in the past, too. Don't get me wrong. It's not always roses and good-smelling perfumes for Keith Lee.
We need chubby guys and hillbillies. That's what we need.
I'm all in. I'm all in. I think that's already exists. It's called ICW.
The other funny thing was besides that, was the still shot, or not even a still shot. It's just... they kept the camera on Diesel and Undertaker for an awkward amount of time as they did the stare down. I'm guessing 20 seconds, where you're just waiting for the director to yell cut. And it was like, it was very painful to watch. And it got kind of hard to believe that these guys are still going to stare each other for that long and not say a word. Right. It's like, I'm just waiting for Diesel to go.
It's not hard to believe that Undertaker doesn't say a word.
Yeah, true. But
because he don't say anything. He's not going to say a word. He's just going to stare at you until you leave. I'll be here all day. I don't even have to blink. I just stand here. It doesn't matter. Look at my purple tights. You know that I mean business.
All they were waiting for was like Aubrey Edwards to pop up between them with that face. I need somebody to superimpose that onto a tweet, you know, to see Aubrey in between Undertaker and Diesel in the stare down at the backstage interview.
I need you to just personally interview Aubrey Edwards at this point. I need this feud to be real life and canon. Because, man, you are firing at all cylinders at old Aubrey today.
I'm sorry. I know. I try not to pick on AEW, but it just comes out of me sometimes.
Before we end this, did you like Arn's back, baby boy? Yeah.
I know. Double A. And he's with Wardlow. Interesting combination. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I really like it. I hate Wardlow. So this is something that gives me a reason to want to watch him. Glock Daddy. Pappy with the strappy.
Oh, man. How about Arn pulling out the Glock and QT backing away from an imaginary gun?
Yep, that's what you do. You don't ever mess with Arn, the enforcer.
I love the name Armed Anderson. That's
that's
fantastic.
A great one, too. There's so many funny ones that I've been running them all. Mine's Pappy with the strappy.
Overall, what would you give this pay-per-view? Would you give it a thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
It's a two-sided coin. If you're a wrestling purist, if you're looking for the best wrestling matches you've ever seen, don't watch this pay-per-view. Save yourself an hour and a half, 2 hours. Don't watch this pay-per-view. If you're looking to be entertained and you're going to find Michael Piaz Hayes selling video game consoles to be great, then you're going to love this pay-per-view, and it's a two thumb up all day. Is he too old to wrestle at this point? Is that why he's not wrestling? Does he have like injuries or something? Or
yeah,
what happened to Michael P.S. Hayes? Why did he go into a backstage role? Because it doesn't seem like he's super old.
Michael P.S. Hayes started in the late 70s, and he started as a teenager. I think he was like 17 or something like that when he started. So he only would have been like late 30s, early 40s at this point. I don't know. I think he just his magic was on the mic. It wasn't in the ring.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so.
But I also think he had a magic for drawing heat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is something that doesn't get noticed. Like, my generation only knows him as this, which is really, really, really upsetting.
It is.
Because
yeah.
There is like a gift of him on a microphone that you don't see very much. Like, he's so damn talented. It's a present wrapped in a bow.
Oh, yeah.
And that just doesn't exist with younger wrestling fans, because we see him as the annoying guy with the ponytail that never shuts up and it wants to sell you WrestleMania on Nintendo, Super Nintendo. And like, yeah. I just pine for a day that he just rips that shirt off and he pulls back his hair and he's got the long mullet back and then the bat hits and he walks to the ring. I know it'll never happen. But it's just something I want. But for me, I'm a sports entertainment guy. Mm-hmm. I should honestly just be a member of the JAS at this point. But I will give it a thumb up for me.
Thumb up? Okay. All right. For myself, I'd say, yeah, I'm the same. Like a thumb reluctantly up is what I'll say. You know, I mean, I'm ensconced in this 95 WWF, WCW, and I'm seeing a lot better stuff on WCW right now.
That's
but
it.
I...
ass. So WCW is running a little better right now.
They're running a little better right now. But, you know, I have fond memories of the Arkansas Hogpen match, and it lived up to my memories, so I did enjoy that part. Anything with Brett, I'm going to enjoy, and I did enjoy that match with Davey Boy. So seeing Jeff Jarrett back was always a good time. Seeing Buddy Landell in the WWF ring is hilarious. So, yeah, there's some good stuff and there's some bad stuff, but it is what it is. I'll put it that way. And it was, yeah, you're right. If you're a wrestling purist, don't go and watch it. But if you're somebody who wants to watch an old show and get a good laugh out of it, yeah, you're going to enjoy this one.
If you don't say something nice about Ahmed Johnson, you're fake.
Great orator, Ahmed Johnson. So that'll wrap it up for this pay-per-view. So in my next episode, I'm going to be talking about the go-home show, or sorry, the Raw after this pay-per-view, and it's interesting. And then also the Nitro that followed this pay-per-view as well, because it's a very key episode of the Monday Night War, a big event happening in that episode. And going to finish off the year of 1995 as well. WWF surprisingly did not run a show on Christmas Day, which is odd for them, but WCW sure did. So they once again kicked the living crap out of them in the ratings because of that. And then we'll be heading into 96, which I'm excited about, because 96 and 97 are some good years of wrestling with both companies. But Taylor, once again, I appreciate you coming on board. Appreciate you joining me for this, and the fact that you've had me on your show as well. And you know, anytime there's an open invite, if you want to come on, talk some old crappy wrestling, I'm there for it. But one more time, if you want to give your details and where they can find you, just in case they weren't listening at the beginning.
Well, I appreciate you, and I appreciate you for having me on. Always a pleasure. You know how much I enjoy your content. Make sure they check you out at Wrestling with the Aces on YouTube. They can find you on all platforms at Wrestling with the War as well, right? Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I am just everywhere, man. Jaded Wrestling. Just look me up. You'll find me. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to keep pumping out weirdo content, and if you don't listen, you're fake.
You know what I love too about your episodes? They're short, and so yeah, you can run through them in an hour. You get three episodes put
well
together,
I don't want to do this thing where it's like 2.5 hour episodes. Yeah. Like when we started doing this, we were running really, really long, and I just find that to be boring. People have things to do, people have lives, and I want to hear you talk about wrestling, and I want you to hear me talk about wrestling, but I don't want you to spend all day listening to me talk. So yeah, I'm going to get what I want in. I'm going to be like an Ahmed Johnson promo, very quick and to the point, and maybe not make a lot of sense.
Hey, on that note, I'm going to say that we're running out of time. Taylor, thank you very much, and we are out of here.
Thank you.